From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm Hart. Phil Moore.
I'm from The Intermission.
Coming up, we'll get to the heart of a controversy dividing San Francisco.
People should know what the Ellis Act is, that it's a myth, that there's a protected class.
The Ellis Act lets landlords take rental units off the market. It's been blamed for the eviction of thousands of San Franciscans, but it's also provided opportunities for some families.
And the TIC opportunities that we came across really were the only opportunities that we had.
Today we're going beyond the headlines to learn how the Ellis Act came to be, how it's changed over time, and how it's affecting San Francisco.
Do we want to be a city of only folks from certain income brackets, or do we want the type of diversity that we've always loved about our San Francisco?
Stay tuned for the Ellis Act edition of Cross Currents.
Up with the tenants! Yeah, yeah! Down with the evictions! Up with the tenants!
On a recent morning in San Francisco, near where Nob Hill and Chinatown meet, about 200 people gathered around what's come to be the symbol of wealth disparity in the city, an apartment eviction.
Exploitation.
The Lee family has been served an eviction notice under the Ellis Act. They've lived at 1508 Jackson Street since 1979. They raised seven children here. Their adult daughter, who's disabled, still lives with the senior citizens. A man with a megaphone steps up before the crowd. It's Ted Gullickson, the head of the San Francisco Tenants Union.
We are in the midst of a crisis, an epidemic. Ellis evictions have tripled in the past year. They're at an all-time high for the last 12 years. This is happening all over the city, all over this neighborhood. On the next block up, there's an Ellis eviction. Next block of Larkin, two Ellis evictions. Next block of Washington, one Ellis eviction. This is happening everywhere. And we need to fight like this every time it happens. This is what we need to do. And we need to get the politicians to act and the city officials to act because it is a crisis.
Since the state passed the Ellis Act in 1985, it's been used to evict residents from nearly 5,000 San Francisco apartments. City leaders are scrambling right now to manage the impact of the law, but it's already changing the demographics of San Francisco. Today we're taking a close look at the Ellis Act, from the political to the personal. We'll hear about the law's original intent and how that's changed over time. We'll meet the people whose lives could improve thanks to vacated apartments, and we'll hear from City Hall. But first, we're going to meet some San Franciscans who have been evicted under the Ellis Act.
My name is Teresa Flandrick. I've lived here for 30 years. And in April of this year, I received Ellis Act notice that I'll be evicted.
People call me Mrs. Lee.
The owner provided a notice to me. Using the Ellis Act to evict me.
My name is Diego De Leo. I live in North Beecher 40 years. I'm moving there with the wife. She passed away. I'm by myself. I've been Ellis Acted about 2 months ago, so I have another 10 months to stay, and then I'll move out. I have to.
7 o'clock in the morning on April 11th, the doorbell rang, and there was a server. My son answered the door, and he was just given the papers. I was absolutely stunned.
You lived 30, 40 years in one place. All the love and the spirit of the experience and the wife and the family member there. A lot of memory there. It's difficult to find, to get adjusted to an environment, friends, to store.
I have a
developmentally disabled daughter. She's in a new environment or a place that doesn't meet her needs. It's very difficult for her.
And when I do move, I try to be in North Beach. My life is in North Beach.
I'm looking for housing, which is very difficult. I, of course, want to stay in the neighborhood. It is my home. It's my community. Prices just keep going up. And if people want, you know, first month's, last month's, and security, that is gone. I can't afford that.
Our income, we cannot afford the rent here.
So trying and trying time and time again, I just was not able to find another place to live.
I don't know. Well, because I'm alone now, a studio would do. A small place. I should be able... Well, I don't make much money, Social Security, a pension.
The problem is that even if the sheriff comes, I would not know where to move the stuff to. It's been very hard for me, you know, but and I worry all the time.
People should know what's happening. People should know what the Ellis Act is. The seniors and the disabled are not protected. Anyone just starting out or anyone with a limited income will not be able to live here. It's destroying the neighborhood.
The move is, at my age, you know, that's a death sentence in a way.
You heard from Diego De Leo, Teresa Flandrick, and Gumji Lee. They each lived in one of almost 200 San Francisco units taken off the rental market by the Ellis Act in the last fiscal year. Tim Lee with the San Francisco Rent Board says it's the city's most vulnerable people who tend to get evicted.
It is quite often long-term tenants. I think part of the reason is that it may be more economically viable or profitable to Ellis, a long-term tenant with low rents.
But it wasn't always that way. In fact, the Ellis Act was created for quite a different purpose. It all began with the financial ambitions of a Southern California teenager. In the late 1970s, Hannah Nash bought a $260,000 apartment building in Santa Monica for her 17-year-old son, Jerome. He soon grew disenchanted with being a landlord. He decided to evict the tenants, demolish the building, and sell the land at a profit. But as Tim Lee explains, the city of Santa Monica told Jerome Nash,
"You need just cause to evict a tenant, and you're wanting to go out of the rental business. It's not a just cause listed in our rent ordinance."
Nash sued. His case went all the way to the state Supreme Court, which said,
"A landlord does not have a constitutional right to go out of the landlord-tenant business."
So Nash could not go through with the eviction. But that court decision caught the attention of Republican State Senator Jim Ellis of San Diego. He wrote a bill that
said, "Well, you may not have a constitutional right to go out of the landlord-tenant business, but we're going to give you a statutory right," and that's what they did in enacting the Ellis Act.
Here's how it works. It's pretty simple.
The first thing that the landlord has to do is serve a notice of termination of tenancy.
Most renters get about 4 months' notice. Elderly and disabled people who qualify get a year.
The landlord has to pay certain relocation amounts.
That can be thousands of dollars.
Other than that, there's really not too much.
In its first dozen years, fewer than 50 Ellis petitions were filed in San Francisco total. But then around 1997, as the real estate market was heating up, landlords started using the Ellis Act more often. Legally, Ellis buildings didn't just have to sit there vacant. There could be a lot of money in converting them for sale.
Over the years, it became apparent that once you Ellis'd a property, as long as it was not re-rented residentially, it was not in violation of any of the constraints imposed by the Ellis Act. And people started realizing and acting on that and Ellising units in order to have them be sold as two tenants in common. And then basically an industry started growing up around tenancies in common.
You're listening to a special Ellis Act edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan.
Hi. How are you?
How are you?
There's a bedroom and bath upstairs, and another big bath downstairs, and then access to the garage is downstairs, too.
On a recent Sunday, potential buyers are checking out a one-bedroom TIC open house in San Francisco's Coal Valley.
Does it come with parking?
It does, yeah. One-car parking. Hi, Vin.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Here you go. It's a TIC, not a condo.
A TIC, that's tenancy in common. It's a form of property ownership in which a group of people own shares of an entire building rather than their individual units.
What are they asking?
$649.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for
coming. Thank you.
You're welcome.
TICs make up about 5% of residential sales in San Francisco. Ashley Lyon, who lives in one, says they play an important role.
And they really do represent one of the best opportunities for middle-income, first-time homeowners to get their roots set in the city and have a form of housing that can be stable.
Lyon is with Plan C, a civic group which bills itself as the moderate voice of San Francisco. We spoke with Lyon and two other San Franciscans about living in a TIC.
My name is Darren Bridget, and I live in a TIC with my wife and son.
My name is Jennifer Grant. I live in a TIC in the North Panhandle, and I've lived there with my family for 8 years.
My name is Ashley Lyon, and I live in a TIC with my wife.
I was in love with San Francisco, and I really wanted to stay here.
We wanted to set our roots in San Francisco and started looking to see what might be available to buy, and prices then were as crazy as they are now.
I don't think we even looked at any single-family homes. They were completely out of our price range.
And condos, again, were just a little bit too much out of our price range.
The TIC opportunities that we came across really were the only opportunities that we had.
When we finally made the choice, like, okay, we're going to do this, we got a realtor, and this was actually the first place that we looked at.
It's worked out great. Really, we love our neighborhood. It has turned out to be increasingly family-friendly.
It's a great building. If it weren't for the TIC option there, my wife and I, you know, very well may have moved out of the city many years ago.
We've told our kids I have no intention of moving again. This is probably where they'll come when they're adults to visit us and maybe bring their kids.
Being able to own a home in the city is great. I wish that all of the prices in the city for housing or for rent were just way less, or at least in line with what people earn when they're just contributing working people in the city.
Darren Bridget, Ashley Lyon, and Jennifer Grant all bought their TICs at least 6 years ago. Since then, the dream of an affordable San Francisco has grown more remote. The online residential listing and research site Trulia just named the city the most unaffordable in the nation for both renters and home buyers. The city has the highest rents in the country and the fastest rising. According to Trulia, the average city family could afford just 14% of homes currently listed for sale. Even TICs at an average price of $750,000 are beyond most people's reach. Janann New is the executive director of the San Francisco Apartment Association. She says she's got the city's affordability woes figured out.
It's simple economics. It's all supply side. You have to provide housing for your workforce, and San Francisco does a poor job of that. It's 30 years of failed housing policy, and it can't continue.
What's more, New believes the city's attempts to regulate the housing market have made matters worse for everyone.
So the government rent control regulations limit an owner's ability to raise the rent, and a lot of times you'll have individuals, tenants in the building, paying way below market rent.
For most renters in San Francisco, the increase is limited to less than 2% per year. New says that creates a problem for landlords.
And the courts have guaranteed an owner a fair rate of return on their property. And many times when they can't get that rate of return, coupled with increasing values in properties, they choose, instead of subsidizing people in their building that they don't know, that aren't family members, they choose to go out of the market altogether and sell the units as ownership units.
New says she's sympathetic to people who've been evicted, but she says criticism of the Ellis Act is misplaced.
I believe that the Ellis Act is a balance of rent control. So we think having homeowners in San Francisco is just as healthy as having renters. If a building's Ellis, the unit's not gone. The use has just changed. It's changed from a rental unit to a homeowner unit.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We're devoting the entire show today to understanding Ellis Act evictions in San Francisco. We know a rapidly growing number of city residents are having their lives disrupted when properties are pulled off the rental market. But what happens once you've been Ellis'd? KLW's Melanie Young spent time with one tenant who's moving on.
Yep. This is going to go to Goodwill. Marla Knight is packing up her home. She's lived there for 48 years. She can't take everything with her, so she's choosing what to part with and what to keep.
You know, it's like the archaeology and micro archaeology project. It's like my whole life. Here's probably the first hula hoop ever produced. This is a dollhouse that my grandfather made for me. He was a machinist. I kind of think that I've winnowed it down to the stuff that really means stuff to me.
Her eviction deadline is coming up, and she's already made about a dozen trips to Goodwill.
We're all supposed to be out, but nobody has any place to go, so there you have it. There is the county jail, however. Yeah.
Actually, all joking aside, Marla found a place that is much nicer than jail. But to find it, she had to think outside the San Francisco box.
My process has been I've gone north, not to Marin. I checked a little bit at Marin, but it's too expensive. I would have liked maybe Larkspur, but that's too expensive for me. So I chose to go to Petaluma.
The apartment, about 45 minutes north of San Francisco, costs $100 more per month than her current place. It's also just half the size. But Marla sees a lot to like.
Just a good feel about it. You know, it doesn't have the charm of this place, but it had like a skylight, a smallish living room with a nice kitchen on the end, and everybody's got a little deck. So it's really nice.
It's a great find for Marla, except for one issue. She doesn't have a unit there.
That's the catch. When I felt lucky to get on a waiting list, so I don't know when. You know, it kind of depends on, you know, who moves or, I guess, who dies. So it's very iffy, so I'm going to have to do some sort of interim housing, which I checked on. Things are rising as we speak, probably. So I know I'm going to have to pay big bucks.
The average rent for a one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco is $2,900. When a disabled person or a senior citizen like Marla loses her home to an Ellis Act eviction, landlords are required to give a year's notice and about $8,600 for relocation. But in this housing market, she says,
it's meaningless. A year on paper looks, oh, well, that looks like a good time, but given the market, it's not, because there is no place to move. And the money is nothing. I mean, we all figured that out from the very beginning, that it means absolutely nothing with the way the rents are. But everybody's scared. I mean, you know, most of us still are renters in the city. All my friends are. My friend that lives on the other side of the hill, she said, I can just see her landlord is in his 50s. She says, I can just hear his kids saying, Dad, now would be a great time to sell. You know? And she's a retired teacher, and she started up some little business to make more money because nobody knows when the next axe is going to fall. And every time my friends say they get an official-looking letter, they're just shaking, you know? Yeah. Because most all of us, with a couple of exceptions, are renters.
Marla is a fourth-generation San Franciscan, and she's been active in shaping her part of the city. She volunteers as a tutor at her neighborhood center, helped get a stop sign and a fence put around the children's playground. She taught nursing and English as a second language for many years at City College.
I feel that I have contributed, and I'm still contributing, to the to San Francisco. You know, it's wrong that I'm forced to move. It's really wrong.
Marla has consulted with the attorneys at the Tenderloin Housing Clinic, but her eviction is legal under the Ellis Act. 2 months after Marla was evicted, her neighbors in an apartment building up the street were also served with Ellis Act evictions. For Cross Currents, I'm Melanie Young.
The growing sense that something is wrong in San Francisco has politicians at City Hall talking.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors meeting of Tuesday, November the 26th, 2013.
Thank you, Supervisors, for inviting me back, and also thank you to the audience for being here as well.
A few weeks ago, Mayor Ed Lee's weekly question session with the Board of Supervisors was dominated by concerns over Ellis evictions.
As you know, I started my career as an affordable housing advocate and tenants' rights lawyer, and used to pride myself on my ability to extend the process of an Ellis Act eviction, and in turn help tenants remain in their homes for as long as we could. With our economy recovering from recession, there are speculators looking to take advantage of the strong real estate market at the expense of longtime tenants with no place to go. By buying a building with the sole intent to evict the rent-controlled tenants, speculators are undermining the affordability of our entire housing stock. In past economic cycles, we've seen the number of Ellis Act evictions skyrocket as property values increase. I'm committed to taking action on the Ellis Act before this disturbing trend at no-fault evictions start to spiral into even greater, larger crisis. So what can we do, colleagues? Well, the heart of the matter lies with the state law itself. The Ellis Act is being abused by real estate speculators, so we need to go to the state and change that law. I will ask you, Supervisor, and every member of the Board of Supervisors to stand with me and support changes to the Ellis Act at the state level. We need to end the real estate speculation that is destabilizing our neighborhoods.
Back at his office, Board President David Chu says to defend San Francisco's renters, the city also has to defend its renter protection policies.
Now, I don't agree with the perspective that some have had that we need to get rid of rent control. I think rent control is what has actually protected thousands of San Franciscans and should remain intact. But I think we need to do more. And I do think we all have an incredible imperative to work together to figure out how everyone who wants to have an opportunity here, who is from a working family, from an immigrant background, if you're senior or you're disabled, and particularly if you are low income and a tenant, that you have an opportunity to stay in San Francisco.
The supervisors are considering several local amendments to the Ellis Act, like increasing relocation payments, restricting the sale of Ellis buildings, or requiring hearings and permits to invoke the Ellis Act in the first place. Chu says these measures will help define the future of San Francisco.
And I think we have to take a step back and think, who do we want to be as a city? Do we want to be a city of only folks from certain income brackets, or do we want the type of diversity that we've always loved about our San Francisco? And I think the answer to that is clear.
Last week, the Board of Supervisors passed legislation to give Ellis tenants priority to the city's affordable housing units and programs. The mayor is expected to sign that bill. Meanwhile, Ellis Act evictions continue to rise. The Rent Board recently released its latest Ellis eviction tally. In October, 41 apartment units were Ellis'd. That's the largest number of units withdrawn in a single month in more than 5 years. Most of the Ellis tenants we spoke with are still looking for housing. The Lee family, however, found a new place in San Francisco. An anonymous landlord stepped forward to offer them a one-bedroom apartment. The unit is smaller and more expensive than their old place, but the Lees say they're relieved and grateful to have found a home. We conducted many more interviews for this show that we didn't have time to air. You can find those conversations with the full stories of San Franciscans who've been Ellis'd, as well as people living in tenancies in common, online at klw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. And you can share your own story in the comments section. That's all for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Jasmine Lopez, Liz Mack, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, Charlotte Silver, and Ray Sue Sussman. We had translation assistance from Tina Chung. Today's show was produced by Melanie Young. It was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our senior producer. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.